Hello. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Cider Voice. I think, if I'm correct, that this is going to be episode 9. And today we're going to be talking just about how much we love cider, basically. There's no real theme. But instead, we're going to be building conversation around an honoured guest, friend of mine for 4 years now. Without further ado, it's our friend Nicky Kong, founder of Cat in the Glass, previously GM of Crown and Kettle, where Nicky founded the Manchester Cider Club, probably the most successful cider club in the country that's been going strong all this time. And yeah, Cat in the Glass is Nicky's online bottle shop, where you can buy all the best ciders and lots of your favourite beers all in one place. Nicky, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming and joining us. And as always, I'm joined by the Wells duo, Adam and Justin. How are you both?
Yeah, very well. How are you? How is harvest going today? yesterday when you recorded the first harvest. Do you remember that amazing week where I turned up and did toil the like of which Peter Stowe had not seen?
Adam, you were absolutely fantastic. You were literally there at six in the morning until 6 o'clock at night. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't get you out of that shed.
Didn't have a drop to drink other than cold rainwater, ate only stale bread, and gave Albert loads of money.
Yeah, it was amazing. You're the best harvest help we've ever had. Okay, so Nicky, we wanna chat to you about your journey through cider, basically how you see things. Nicky, will you tell everybody about where you think you taking cider seriously and thinking, oh, actually, you know, I can have a business in this industry, and everything. Where did that all come from? Where did it start?
I guess, well, when I took on the pub, I didn't have a clue about beer or cider, for that matter. I built up the beer side of things and then got talking to Dick and Kath, who obviously introduced me to the cider side of things. And then that's where you came in and did the first sort of cider tasting at the pub. And when I tried Raisin d'Etre 2016 for the first time, I thought, wow, like cider can actually taste like this. Whereas previously, obviously, as every kind of everyone's like horror story, yeah, drank too much cider as a child and no, it still went badly wrong. So yeah, that's where it began. And then we did set up Manchester Cider Club, based on the Ross Cider Club, which I've only just been to the very first one. And then yeah, it also like started from there. So I set up Manchester Cider Club. Obviously COVID happened, so we moved that online. The demand was there and it sort of kept building and building. And obviously we're still going now. We've just had our 50th one in July, again with the Ross Cider Club.
That's genuinely incredible.
Yeah, that was a it was a really fun one in July.
Just quickly, just for the listeners, you've mentioned Dick and Kath. Could you just give us a bit of context on who they are?
Absolute legends of the cider scene. both camera members. That's currently the chair of camera for Manchester. But yeah, really passionate about cider, and I think if there's anything to know about cider, they will know it.
Totally. Dick and Kath, some of our great friends. And basically, we as you said, Nicky, you hadn't really drank much cider necessarily before we did that first tasting, which I think was in April 2019 or maybe May. But Dick and Kath basically proud Manchester City fans and proud cider drinkers, and realised at the beginning of 2019 that there wasn't that much great cider in Manchester. You were lucky. You went to a bar and you had Hogan's, then you'd be happy, but pretty much there was nothing else there. And they just took it upon themselves to walk around the entire city going into bars and being like, why aren't you selling good cider? And sometimes they'd be met with someone who was like, it was not my job, mate, leave me alone. And other times they met people like Nicky. And from there, we've now got an amazing cider scene in Manchester.
It does seem kind of wild to me how recent that is. I went to one of the Manchester cider clubs in like lockdown in 2020. And to me, I was like, in my head, I was like, ah, this aged, august institution that has been around for years and years and years. And now I'm discovering that it started in 2019. And I'm like, oh, wow, it's so recent.
Yeah, I think our very first one was May 2019, our very first cider club.
How are the cider clubs going now? Because obviously they have been through this kind of particular transition, haven't they? Where you know, they started off as something that kind of just up in Manchester, and then we had the online period during COVID, which was amazing. Like, it was really great to pivot to that. And for me, you know, not having been able to make it to Manchester before, you know, it was really, really special to, you know, it was always kind of one of those kind of key events in the calendar. I mean, not that the calendar was full of key events in 2020, but Manchester Cider was one of them. And then obviously now it's switched back to in person, but you've done some hybrid ones as well. So yeah, how's it kind of all going at the moment?
Yeah, so we did trial some hybrid cider clubs, but for the time being, I think I'm just going to focus on in person until, like, unless we have like an international speaker, then I'll probably like switch to sort of virtual as well, and have a bit of a hybrid. But for the time being, I think I'm just trying to focus on the in person. Because there's quite a lot to think about on the nights as well when you're like watching the online people and then also the in room. So I think for the time being, I'll keep it in person unless we get any international speakers.
And then, I mean, because Albert said that there isn't really a theme, and I guess there isn't sort of a theme, but it struck me, you know, you've gone from, you know, selling cider in the pub to doing Manchester Cider Club as well. And now also, you know, you've moved to be, you know, the key kind of online aspirational cider merchant in the UK. So it's kind of, you know, they're all forms of putting cider in front of people, right? And getting people to, you know, exposure to a higher quality of cider. Because, I mean, especially with Cat in the Glass, you know, I think back to kind of 2018, or 2016 rather, when I sort of was kind of getting into this sort of cider scene. And you really, for the most part, had to visit producers. I mean, there was far less of, I guess, the kind of cider that you primarily sell on Cat in the Glass anyway. But, you know, you had to know where it was, or you had to buy direct from the producer. And then in 2018, I remember Scratting's kind of started up, and then you started Cat in the Glass in 2020. And, you know, all of a sudden, all these producers that you previously had to know and go to the three counties to find, or Somerset or wherever, you know, or even ciders that, you know, that were overseas, like Eves or Eden, you know, all of a sudden they became just available to buy as part of a mixed case. And I guess it became so much easier to navigate, you know, the British cider and international cider scene than it once was. You know, how have you, so an incredibly rambling way of getting to just like, how have you found the various different ways of like getting people to cider?
I guess, like, for myself, being quite passionate about it now and being like, having the opportunity to try a lot more, like, ciders and perries, and obviously chatting to people like yourselves, like Dick and Kath, and obviously we all kind of, like, travel around and sort of, like, it's different events, that sort of thing. So it has been tricky, like, especially the international ciders, because a couple have stopped importing, and obviously the porting side is just a bit of a joke at the moment. But yeah, I think it's just getting out there and just trying the ciders. I mean, I've tried a lot of terrible ciders, but then there's so much like brilliant like ciders out there as well. It's just picking out the ones that you think are going to sell and that'll interest people and have a bit of a story as well behind them, which I quite like. Especially with the small independent producers that don't have their online stores, for like Cwmadwc, Blue Barrel, something like that. And I suppose I kind of drove quite a lot over 2020-21, racked up a lot of miles to go and pick up all these ciders as well and meet the producers. I think, and finding out their story, which is really interesting.
Nikki, I think it's probably fair to say, in the first 2 years, every single cider that got released by anyone, you would stock it. The range you had was enormous, and the space it took up in Paul Steve's warehouse was pretty extreme. Has your approach to what you're going to stock changed since then, or do you still just say, whatever you've got, give it to me, I'm interested in hearing about it?
Certain producers, yes, I'll generally stock like all the new releases, but I think due to like obviously storage at the moment and space, I've got to be a lot more selective. Yeah. So, like, pick the ones that are really interesting, ones I really enjoy, or that kind of thing. So. But yeah, in an ideal world, I'd be able to stock them all, but that's obviously not possible in the real world.
Present company accepted, perhaps. You know, just because we kind of shill for Albert in every episode. So Ross and Y accepted. You know, who are the producers that I guess are really, you know, maybe producers who are newer to you but are really exciting you, or producers that you know that are really kind of striking chords. You know, the kind of, you know, as soon as you're getting this stuff in, it's kind of flying straight out again.
I guess. Like, Come Maddock, theirs always fly out because I guess they don't have an online output. Bartistry, I think they came up for a cider club and both said that over lockdown, we sold more of their cider in Manchester than down in Hereford. So you know, that's pretty impressive. Wilding always goes down well. Little Pomona, Oliver's, and Greg's Pit as well. They always go down really well.
All your kind of usual suspects then. Is there anybody that's like got a surprising amount of popularity that more people should know about that don't really know about? There's like someone that always, all their cider gets bought.
99 Pines is starting to like fly out as well. I've only just recently stocked them after trying out GBBF. That's going down really well.
What's the split on Cat and Glass between cider and beer?
So after the second year, when I looked at it, it was probably about 60-40, so 60 cider, 40 beer. I think at the moment it's probably 70 cider, 30 beer. There's a lot of mixed orders as well coming through at the moment, which is really good, and which is why I sort of set up Cat in a Glass in the first place, like for a good range of ciders and a good range of beers, and be able to order both from the same place.
It was really cool. I always completely forget that you've also got this amazing range of beer and you know, so the ciders and the perries, and then completely forget to peruse through the beers as well. Like, I mean, that's actually quite a good one. We've been speaking a bit in the famous lost episode of Cider Voice. We'd kind of discussed crossover with wine a little bit, but you know, obviously. As you said, you started off being kind of interested in beer, and then kind of got more into the cider side of things. Yeah, what are the sort of conversations that you've had, I guess, to maybe bring beer people into cider? You know, they're two quite disparate drinks in many ways, but have you found a great deal of success in sort of bringing more beer people into the cider world, and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, I think so, because I've helped out at a few and volunteered at a few sort of like beer and cider festivals. So it's just talking to people and giving them a taste of the cider. That's where the easiest way. They say like what beers they like and that sort of thing. Like the easiest one is if you like a sour well ferment, here's a fox whelp. And 9 times out of 10, they're like, oh wow. Like again, they didn't realise cider could taste like that. So especially with the keg conditioned ciders at the moment as well, like.
Yeah, I mean, keg conditioned ciders, they just kind of tick so many boxes, don't they? And mm-hmm. I guess the additional advantage is that, like bag in boxes, you know, people can kind of try a little bit before they actually, you know, buy a full glass or whatever. Which I guess that must be, you know, one of the difficulties of maybe hand selling bottles or of something in a pub is if, you know, people have to kind of commit before they've had a chance to taste it a little bit.
Absolutely.
I mean, one of the early keg conditioned ciders I had, because obviously, you know, hats off to Little Pomona for who kind of pioneered the keg conditioning method with cider, and then obviously you had your tour kind of all lined up in 2020. Did you manage to get round on your tour in 2020 before lockdown, Albert? I forget the exact timings of it.
Yeah, so I had about 9 tastings, I think, in January and February 2020, and then did 2 more in March, and then lockdown happened.
How's the pub cider scene? So I've just not had a chance to get up there. You know, I got up to Manchester for the club that we did that I did with James in January, but I haven't really had a chance to explore half as much of the kind of pub cider scene that as I'd like. So you know, how's that all looking at the moment?
Yeah, pretty good. A lot better than it was sort of like a few years back when I was managing the pub. She got places where, like, Fierce Bar and Marble Arch, who their cider range is pretty bang on at the moment. So they've got, like, a range of different styles and a range of dispense methods as well, from bag-in-box, bottles. Fierce do by the glass as well, so they'll open 750ml bottles and serve them by the glass. So, yeah, it's really coming along.
Nick, I wanted to ask you, you're a qualified pommelier. Can you tell everybody, like, what motivated you to do the pommelier qualification, how you found it, and all of that?
I was actually chatting to Kath about it, because she was the first pommelier in sort of the north. And, you know, it just sounded really interesting. And obviously I wanted to, like, learn all the technical information and just kind of get up to speed with it, because if I'm going to be selling cider, I'm going to have to learn about it. So I did that with Gabe. Really interesting. And he's just such a great, like, teacher, isn't he, Gabe? He's so passionate about cider. And, yeah, it's just, really good, really interesting. And all the tastings as well were, like, really interesting.
Did you have to submit a portfolio for your... To qualify?
Yeah,
what did
so,
you do?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember now. So we have to do a portfolio, basically saying, like, your cider advocacy and what you've done, like, in cider, and why you feel like you're a cider advocate as such. Definitely recommend the Pommelier if anyone's interested in cider, wants to learn more about it.
A complete segue. Yeah. It's only... you know, whilst we're explaining things on the show, Nikki, we haven't asked you where the name The Cat in the Glass actually comes from.
A bit of a daft story. So over lockdown, a friend of mine fosters cats, so she sent me this photo of this really cute ginger kitten. I was like, oh, can you look after him for a few weeks, and then we'll find him a permanent home. So obviously we're like, yeah, why not. A few weeks later, and there's no way he's ever going to leave. And had a terrible failed foster. So he came to, like, a couple of, like, the cider clubs, and all he kept doing was just sticking his head, like, in the glasses, like, just sniffing them out. And that's how Cat in the Glass was born, because, like, all right, what should we call the business? The Cat in the Glass.
It is funny that cats do that, isn't it? I mean, you know, nutmeg's the same. Anything that, you know, any drink that I have in the glass, she's just fascinated. But she's so puritanical, you know, she'll kind of march over to whatever the glass is and stick her nose in it and then sort of do this, like, over-the-top double take and give me a really, like, shocked look. You know, as if to say, what is this poison you're drinking? Don't you, you know, this is killing you. What's the matter with
Nutmeg the temperance campaign?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's a prohibitionist cat. But you've also, I mean, one of your cats has got to be one of the biggest cats I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, so, sadly, what's it? Lost a fight with a tram. So we're deciding whether to get another cat or not.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah, we've got two indoor cats now, so two British Shorthairs, Monty and Barney. So Monty is absolutely massive. I think he's about 7.5 kilos. And then Barney's quickly catching up. He's about seven.
Oh my God.
And although you describe them as indoor cats, every time I come to deliver, Monty reckons he could make a break for it and that it'd be just fine in the outside world, isn't it? He is always curious.
You have to catch him once, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to jump over into next door's garden and grab him.
When you say 7 kilos, Nutmeg's about 3. You know, she's tiny. It's nice to talk about cats on the cider show, actually, because, you know, we get all the dog content. Yeah. All the time.
I actually think we talk about cats often.
We talk about a cat.
Any opportunity you have to bring up Nutmeg Adam, you seize it.
It's like the Moss Vertle. It's Moss Vertle and Nutmeg are Adam's lightning bolt topics.
Well, I have a perfect way of bringing those two lightning bolt topics together, which is that in Austria, what I discovered is that where, like, the cider dog is, you know, absolutely dominant in the UK and indeed over in France, everyone seemed to have a dog. In Austria, literally every perrier maker that I visited, they've all got cats. You know, I don't think I saw a single dog on my trip there, but all four of them, they had at least a few cats wandering around. One of them, Hazelberger, they didn't seem to, like, necessarily know all of their all of the cats. They're just kind of cats that have sort of wandered in and made a home. But they're So I've you know, that's another reason that Austrian Perrymakers are dear to my heart, is they're the cat stands. Although I will say I'd love to get a dog, and then I'd only bring up the dog.
Yeah,
Nikki, I have a question then. As a Pommelier, as a previous publican, I know that, I mean, you and I have talked a lot about opening a cider bar. It's the dream. So let's say that we've managed to, or you by yourself, or maybe us together, we found a bar. We're getting ready for opening night. It's time to order the stock. However many lines you want, but what would be your must-have ciders? Could be anywhere that, you know, you can magic it in from America if you need to, but it's the opening night of the bar, and to make sure that the bar is a massive success, you've got to have the best possible lineup that you can imagine. Where are you going?
Well, obviously, we're
going
to have a Ross Raisin Detra, right? That's brilliant.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. All right, next question.
You may come back.
Hey, anywhere in the world, I definitely have something from Eves. Actually, the Albie Hill. I do like the DeRidder as well. Eden, one of them, they have one of theirs. Right, Eric Bordelet, have a Poiret from him.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd have a Nightingale in there just for like easy drinking, clean. Something from Little Pomona. Just recently tried their Brut de Poiret, just tasting really great. Hey, what would you have, Albert? We're opening this together.
Oh, all right, well. You gotta have. Well, if I'm talking just draft lines,
brown snout, 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 and a raisin.
Yeah, all of the other lines are cleared out.
No, I think if you've got draft lines, then you're absolutely right. You've got to have a Nightingale, Nightbird.
I perfect. Thought you were going to say you've got to have a Nightingale, and the one you should have is the collaboration that Nightingale has done with Ross on one.
Nah. You get Nightbird, and you've got an acid-driven medium cider. You get an Oliver's to have a tannic-driven medium cider. You get a Perry from us, because we're, as far as I know, we're the only people doing keg-conditioned Perry in keg. Or who else could you get a Perry from? I don't even know. Who else? Even
Little Pomona have a keg-conditioned Perry.
Nightingales do a keg Perry as well. Kentish Perry.
Oh, yeah, they do, actually. And actually, I think I've had it, and I think it was awesome. Yeah, where did I have it? I had it at the Jolly Fisherman in Hastings from Nightingale, and it was great. But they're already in with Nightbird. Little Pomona, we've got to save them for Root and Branch, probably, rather than their Perry. I don't know. Maybe we can have both. I mean, these days, if you open a bar, and this is the great thing, you have at least 10 lines. You just have an absurd amount of lines. Because actually adding more lines doesn't take up more space, really, once you've got started. So you've got to get them in. I think it'd be fun. Nottingham Beer Festival is next weekend, next week as we're recording this, but it'll be long since gone. But they've got on keg-conditioned cider from Udder's Orchard in Huddersfield. So Dave, a really great guy, started doing keg-conditioning as well for some really high-quality stuff. I always think another like classic, really good blended medium, but actually it's not keg-conditioned, but it's still decent cider. It's the City Moo, based in Sussex, I think. Who just do one thing, medium cider, but they do it really, really well. Forgetting producers, this is what the ideal cider on tap lineup is: tannic dry, tannic oak barrel, sharp, as in Foxwell, light and easy, as in Eaters or Eastern Counties Fruit, another medium, and then two Perries. That's eight lines, and then you've got two more lines you could do something crazy with. But I think if you had those core eight, you'd be pretty all right. Have I missed anything, Adam?
No, I'd definitely come to this bar. I mean, two Perries is quite conservative, but given how a hype Perry has been revealed to be,
there'll be a big old fridge with 750s in it.
Well, that's it. Like Perry on draft is hard to get hold of. To be honest, there's not that much of it around, I don't think.
No.
But I could be wrong.
I mean, keg conditioning, is something that I would love to see a few more producers have a go at, because from what I mean, I'm no maker, but from what you've told me, it's not, you know, the actual creating of the keg, the filling of it is not too difficult.
Well, just for any makers listening to this, hobbyists or not, keg conditioning is literally easier than bagging boxes, because you are more likely to have a better quality product, because it's essentially the same thing. You're just putting your cider into a bag, except now it's fermenting in the bag, which is going to stop it going off. It's going to preserve it. And all you need to do this is a key keg coupler, which will cost you £40, and the racking pump that you already have. Or gravity, if you want. But with gravity, you might not be able to fill it all the way, because it probably needs a bit of pressure to do that. I'm not sure. But literally, and that's it. And then the key kegs. And so the downside is that a key keg costs more than a bagging box. That's absolutely true. The downside is that a key keg is made of plastic rather than cardboard and plastic. So there's more weight of plastic in a key keg. That's true as well. But if you're a small producer or you have your own venue, you can reuse key kegs. Now, they're kind of a bit vague. Well, I think they probably say you shouldn't do it, but they would do that. But we've been reusing them for 4 years, and it's absolutely possible. So that kind of helps alleviate some of the environmental problems and some of the cost problems with key kegs. And the other thing is, actually, customers are prepared to pay more for cider that comes sparkling out of a tap than they are for a bag-in-box. So the increased price of a key keg is easily affordable for the value perception of the drink. And for its improvement to quality, it's also a small price to pay, in my opinion.
Sold.
Right, well, it's settled then. Everyone's going to stop.
Thinking outside of Manchester, I have, you know, just, I mean, generally, to be honest, you know, whenever I go on a cider trip, it's usually over to Herefordshire and to... you know, to Somerset, Devon, seeing the producers. But I'd really love one of these days, and hopefully I will next year, to kind of travel a little bit more around the UK, finding you know, pubs that do cider really, really well. Because obviously I really want to go up and see Chris and Susanna Mansfield at the Station House in Durham. There's a few others. I mean, I got a chance to go to the Fierce Bar when I visited Manchester. But you know, what would be examples, Nikki and Albert, of pubs that you think do cider really, really well, you know, out, maybe outside of the ones in Manchester that we've mentioned?
I mean, I've already mentioned the Jolly Fisherman in Hastings. That's fantastic. You've got to give a huge shout out to the Hop Inn in Hornchurch, Alison Taft's. Absolutely phenomenal venue, putting all effort into doing cider in the right way. Or the Jolly Judge in Edinburgh as well. But I would say that the Jolly Judge, Station House, Hop Hideout, those three for me, probably, I mean, in this country, Joran in Brussels is the best, hands down. But, well, maybe it's close. Those three, and possibly actually that beer place in Chester, those three or four venues have great cider on draft from a range of high-quality producers all the time. Whereas a lot of the other bars that I really love, Vessel Beer in Plymouth, The Salutation, Pete Tiley in Gloucestershire, fantastic. Joyce in London, fantastic. Kilder in Birmingham, Bacaretto in Cardiff, Hop Hideout in Sheffield, and Fierce, as you say, are all also fantastic. I mean, depends how many different producers do you need to have at a bar for it to be exciting and sensational?
I mean, a minimum of 20 to 25, I'd say, in this day.
He's all keg conditioned.
Yeah, all keg conditioned.
Yeah. And also, I'm doing a disservice to a lot of bars as well, because if you haven't been there to visit, it's hard to say. I've been to Bacaretto 5 times, and every single time it was awesome, but I was only going to drink my own cider. So,
have you found like a phenomenon? You know how people are like, oh, well, Guinness tastes totally different in Ireland to how it tastes anywhere else. Have you discovered that there's like a raison phenomenon where you know, if you have it in Peterstow, it's just objectively better than when you tasted it all over the rest of the UK?
No, but even if I had, I wouldn't say that.
Nikki, you talked about the like the dream bar there, but a question that I have, because obviously we've mentioned that importing and exporting is, I don't know who cares about exporting right now, but importing good ciders is difficult. But like, are there any producers or countries where, you know, they would be the absolute dream? Like, do you have like a wish list of if importing was no difficulty, there's like a maker or a country that you'd just love to get stuff from?
I think definitely the US, because after going to Cider Salon, I basically spent the entire time in the downstairs bar and barely left any time for upstairs. I was just whizzing around upstairs for like the last half an hour. But some of the ciders that like were brought over were just incredible. And obviously, like, we wouldn't ever taste anywhere here. Another place I'd like, I don't have any at the moment, but Basque Ciders. I'm sure that's one I can probably... like pick your head about at some point. I'd like to go and visit and try some ciders and yeah, hopefully start stocking some. So that's on the wish list at the moment. Obviously some more Kirtle Rider won't go amiss either. Get some more Barry stuff over.
I just want to encourage people to visit Cat in the Glass. I'm actually doing it as you speak. And there's 20 pages of ciders to choose from.
That is wild.
I went on Cat in the Glass for the first time and I did an order from you, Nikki, and I went on and I was like, oh, I'm just going to go on quickly. And I know I kind of have an idea on what I want to get. And then I was there and I proceeded to be there for like an hour and a half being like, do I want that one? Do I want that one? Genuinely awesome. Like, because I have only ever heard Cat in the Glass in relation to cider. So seeing all the beers, I was like, shit, there's all this beer as well. It all looks great. But it's really cool, and you know you can filter it in all cool ways. You can be like, oh, I'll get filtered by place and all that kind of thing. But yeah, it's an astounding selection, really really amazing selection. It was a pleasure just to kind of scroll and wish list, to be frank.
I think it's a good site for real buyer's remorse, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's always going to be okay. Well, I'm getting these, but I really hope that those ones are there next time.
Well, I just spotted that there's a Ross & Meyer Bulmers Norman there, which is such a aged bottle that, I mean, I remember which one it is, but it's with our old branding and it's a screw cap 750. One of the, possibly the last screw cap Ross & Meyer available to buy from anywhere in the world. I don't know, I'm tempted. Well, Nikki, if you put one aside for me next time I deliver it, that would be epic.
Yeah.
Albert, are you stooping so low to use this podcast for advertising purposes?
No. Well, actually, on that, Nikki, you and I made a cider together and you've done a few collaborations now. Do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, your experience in doing collaborations with different people, how you found it, how you enjoyed it, and beers as well as ciders you've been involved in making?
Yeah. So I've done a few beers, a few ciders. In fact, I've got a new collab cider coming out for the Cat in the third birthday. So this one is a Keith cider with Smith Hain.
Oh wow,
big time.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to seeing how this one comes out, but it'll be quite like medium sweet, a bit of a blend, a bit of a concoction. I went down a few months ago and did a bit of a sort of tasting with Will and Anna. Put it together. We've actually wrote it down this time so we can like forget what was what.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that's so cool that you're doing a collaboration with Smith Hain. In case people who are 12 listeners haven't come across Smith Hain, they should go back through our back catalogue, because in first generation Cider Boys, we did an episode entirely dedicated to dissecting a Smith Hain in forensic detail. But they're a lovely cidery in I think they're in North Devon, but I might have completely got my...
I think that seems right to me. I was a little bit cynical earlier listing the best cider bars. You know, those three that I isolated on another level. But actually, if you wanted to go to Manchester and spend a whole week drinking cider in pubs, there is no better city in the UK to do it in. And there's loads that I forget, but you know, you've got Marble, you've got Fierce, you've got Cask and Coates, you've got Smithfield Market Tavern. And all those four are literally within 3 minutes walking of each other. And in every one of them, you will find amazing ciders. And that's not even scratching the surface of the places that, you know, that I deliver to, or Hogan's deliver to, or Fine Cider delivers to. There is amazing cider all across Manchester from so many bars. You know, Stalybridge Buffet Bar on the outskirts deserve a big shout out as well for always supporting cider for ages. And like Petersgate Tap in the south, there's literally so many great pubs in Manchester that it's literally fierce. The competition between the pubs for the awards and the recognition and everything else.
Jumping on the idea of, like, you know, getting cider into pubs and all the kind of advocacy and the Pommelier stuff. Are there any fairly typical kind of hurdles or problems that you run into with, like, trying to advocate for cider? Like things like, I don't know, whether it be common misconceptions or like sort of institutional hurdles. What are the things that tend to stand in your way most consistently?
I think at the moment, obviously just being online with Cat in the Glass, I don't sort of speak to as many people. So I guess that's a little bit of a barrier. But I guess just going to more events and cider events and posting more about cider thing will hopefully overcome that a little bit. And yeah, just talking to people. Like Manchester Cider Club as well, that's growing month by month at the moment. So more people getting interested in it and coming along. And
one question I had was, obviously the Cat in the Glass has done amazingly, but what are your sort of hopes and plans for the maybe immediate and sort of longer term future with Cat in the Glass?
And when Albert's coming up to find a bar. I think in terms of physical premises, it's currently on hold for the time being, and I'll probably reevaluate that in the new year. Because I'm currently doing a PT course, because it's two things that I enjoy, obviously beer and cider and also exercise. But also I thought two kind of go hand in hand, a bit of balance, and I need a bit of balance in life.
Yeah, I was going to say they are sort of a reflection of one another, aren't they?
well, there's that event, isn't there, that I was reading about, where it's like the beer mile where you kind of run a lap of the athletics track and then you've got to like down a can of beer, so you know, and then continue running. So maybe there needs to be like that.
I cannot describe a more exquisite form of torture. That sounds like the worst idea anyone has ever had.
Well, there's this guy who does it in about 4.5 minutes. It's unbelievable. So you know, maybe the sort of that man
might need a professional intervention.
There's actually a cider version of that. That's how that happens in Somerset. They cider phone or something. It's called. But actually, this is the perfect segue to my game for this episode, which is that Nikki, Adam, and I are all actually fans of the same football club. We all support Liverpool. So I wanted to each come up with or pick one player from Liverpool's squad and tell us what their...
Justin's disappeared. He's heard football come up, and he's like, "I'm no longer interested."
He's taking his notes.
I'm literally googling the Liverpool squad.
So we're going to pick a player and then say what apple or pear variety most embodies that player. With me, I'll give you a few moments to think about it whilst I tell you mine. I'm going with Curtis Jones. Or previously I would have had Gini Wijnaldum, who are dependable, reliable, underrated passers of the ball who add balance and depth to any team, a.k.a. the Biscay of the Premier League. Very much the same vibe.
Oh, I'm going to need a minute. This is a very...
It's not that hard. I could literally rattle them off.
Please do.
Of course, Virgil, you can. It's your game. Yeah.
I've thought of a really thinky game, and here's my quick answer. Where's yours? That's Albert.
Yeah. I've gone blank. I can name the players. I just don't think Apple's fine. You stumped me.
Well, only thing that I don't know why this weirdly jumped into my head, but like the moment that. That Albert said, sort of football and bring apple to a player. I just the word, like, you know, tannins are sometimes described as grippy, so that says like a goalkeeper to me. So I'm going in that direction, and saying that Dabinet is just the most consistent and fantastic apple, but also has some very grippy tannins. So I'm going to say that Alisson is Dabinet.
That is tenuous, but I'll give it.
That's tenuous. I'm not sure that this apple equates to this football player. Albert, this is the most off-piste game that you have invented.
Come on, Mo Salah.
No, you've had time to think about that.
There's only one apple you can ascribe to Mo Salah: the intensity, the explosiveness. The sheer awe-inspiring nature of his play can only be matched by Foxwell.
This isn't a game for us, is it, Albert? This is just you wanting to be like, here are my hot takes. I've had some views in the past.
Albert, yeah, go through your ideal starting 11, and we'd just have to do a very quick. You name the player, and then yeah. But why don't you tell us your entire list of apples?
I'm not actually able to do that. But I am just going to reiterate again that I want Caf Potter particularly to associate Foxwell with Mo Salah.
just for our 12 listeners who aren't aware, Caf Potter is another keen Liverpool supporter.
No, massive Man City fan.
Yeah, no, and that was sorry, that was the bit.
Oh, that was part of the bit. Okay, my bad. I'm going to edit my no out.
I actually have one, which is from as people might be able to guess, I've never been a great follower of football. I used to be one of those insufferable people who made that like a big part of their personality. I was like, football, chase the leather sphere. I was a real bellend about it. But then I actually started watching it. I was like, oh, I just don't understand it because no one ever taught me it. And it does look quite fun, but I'm scared of things I don't understand. So from a rapid Google, I have decided that Ryan Gravenberch is a man I know nothing about and yet whose name I like, and therefore will be associated with Slack McGirdle, which is an apple I know nothing about but whose name I like.
I think that's probably the best answer so far.
Well, it is, except I feel like you could almost... Well, I think it's a good answer. My answer isn't good, but you've got Gravenberch. You could also have Gravenstein, a very famous and popular eating apple, and they're almost the same name.
Well, would this one work? Soberslaw. So Somerset Red Streak adds like a depth of flavour, doesn't it, to it? And
yeah.
Like, reliable.
Yeah, get Big Dom in. Well, you've got a blend of Mo Salah, Alisson and Soberslaw. The great start to a five-a-side team there. Absolutely, they can do everything. Right, that's it. Well, I'm enjoying that.
This is going so incredibly over my head.
Doesn't all our conversations go over your head, Justin?
Oh, generally speaking.
Okay, Nikki, it's Cat in the Glass's birthday month. Have you got any shout-outs for anything else, anything apart from that? You've got your big event on, but anything on the website people should look out for this month?
So the Smithane collab will be available online from probably the 24th of November, so I'm super excited for that, to try that.
And Nikki, is Manchester Cyber Club going on every month?
It is still the second Thursday of every month. This month is Mr. Oliver himself on the 14th of December.
Nice, fantastic. Adam, the Kickstarter, when people hear this, will have just concluded, so people will have missed their opportunity to pre-order, or will they be able to pre-order by that point anywhere else, or we don't know yet.
I have no idea if that is in the hands of camera, but what I will say is thank you very, very much indeed to everyone who supported the Kickstarter, because it was just an unbelievable outcome, and the joy of seeing so many people support Perry that on the very first day it hit its target was unbelievable. Thank you all so very, very much.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.